Have you listened to Fake the Nation yet? It's a comedy meets politics podcast on Earwolf, and it's hosted by comedian Nagin Farsad. Every week, Nagin invites her favorite politically astute comedians and policy buffs to gather around and break down the week's news with a hearty dose of gallows humor. Recent guests have included James Adomian, John Lover from Positive America. Fake the Nation has all the comedy about politics without any of the politics about politics. So, if you want to keep up with the dumpster fire of current events while laughing through your tears, I know I do, check out Fake the Nation on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen. New episodes drop every Thursday afternoon. Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and people of podcasting.
I'm Chris Bannon.
And I'm Lex Friedman.
And today our guest is, I mispronounced guest, so that makes it easier. Just do it again.
Okay.
Do you want to make this torture for me? Is that what you're trying to do?
I'm off. I'm done. I'm good.
Okay.
Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and people of podcasting.
I'm Chris Bannon.
And I'm Lex Friedman.
And today our guest is Chris Giliberti, who is from Gimlet Media. He's the head of multi-platform, and we'll find out what that means.
Thank God, because I have no idea.
It's a giant title, it seems. But before we do that, of course, we have to talk about shows we're jealous / envious of.
I think this time, since this episode is coming out on Thanksgiving Day, which shows we're thankful for. That was a Harry suggestion.
Hey, that's beautiful.
Yes.
Wow, I teared up during that.
I know. I got emotional.
I think there's something in my eye, but go ahead.
Well, I'm using an Earwolf show, which I feel guilty about, but I just love it so much. I listened to it as recently as today.
Pandering to the hosts.
Yes. Raised by TV from Lauren Lapkus and John Gabris. You know, it's John Gabris is a frequent Earwolf guest on Comedy Bang Bang playing intern Gino. And Lauren on with special guest Lauren Lapkus is pretty much never herself. I love that this is a show where the two of them can just be themselves and be funny. And it's nice to get to hear them. It's nice to get to hear their real friendship. Whenever they're on Comedy Bang Bang together, you can hear that they are friends. But getting to hear them just nerd out on 80s television, 90s television that they grew up with and crack each other up as themselves, I have found to be – it really just – it's my favorite kind of chat show where you're truly just listening in on good friends talking about stuff that they know well. And I have loved every minute of it so far.
I would totally agree with that. I love the way they have already a dynamic, and Lauren sort of drives the show, and John reacts to everything in kind of outlandish ways and slows it down. Yeah, they have a beautiful friendship. You're right, but I think I'm too old for most of the shows because my childhood shows are a different set of shows.
Yes. But I remember, am their generation, so it's funny for me.
Yeah. So I guess thanks for nothing, Lauren and John. But no, it's a wonderful – it's a great time. And if you get a chance to see it live, and I think we'll be doing some live shows of Raised by TV in the future, you should go see one. Mine is not an Earwolf show. It's – in fact, it's the other – it's as far away from Raised by TV as you could get. It's a show that I – discovered when I was at the Third Coast International Audio Festival last week in Chicago, Illinois. It's called 74 Seconds, and it's a show that won the top award there, which is how it came to my attention. It's about the shooting of Philando Castile.
Wow.
And it's an amazing in-depth look at how that shooting happened, who Philando was, what his life was like before he was shot and killed by a police officer, what the officer's life was like, how he was trained, the trial, everything. And they just... the story that's interesting behind it is they saw this happen to their community, Minnesota Public Radio, and decided they needed to do a show about it and immediately started making it. And it's just really compelling journalism and a kind of public service that I am grateful for.
It's not a competition, but so far I do think you're winning, Chris.
Well, these are the two things. Two of the things that podcasting can do is they can entertain you and inform you.
That's right. Now, Chris, do you have a show that
you're thankful
for? Which
Chris are you talking to?
I don't know. We'll have to. The listeners will have to decide.
Yeah. No. So, I have shows that I'm grateful for and shows that I'm jealous of. So
let's get a little of both.
I mean, I'm grateful for this show, obviously, for having me on it.
Oh, yeah. Pandering will get you.
Can we have him back? We'll have him back next week.
There we go.
No, really.
So, what am I shows that I'm jealous of? I am so blown away by the Daily podcast, the New York Times Daily. You probably heard this a lot. In fact, I know you have. I've heard it a couple times. But I just think it's such a feat what they pull off every single day to animate one of the stories with that degree of color and richness. You know, it's I listen to every single one, and I'm always blown away by the journalism and just every sort of creative aspect of it. I think it's like a beautifully produced show.
Do you listen typically on the day the episode comes out?
I do. I actually have a sort of ritual where I'll listen to it at night, that night, either while I'm cooking or, you know, maybe while I'm getting ready for bed or something. But yeah, every day.
It's very impressive.
What do you listen to for fun?
Well, I find that fun, actually.
No, come on.
With today's news?
It's a great show, but it's a downer sometimes.
It can totally be a downer. But it's good to feel, it's really satisfying to feel informed, which can be hard when you're just sort of rushing around and working hard. And it helps with that. I think the show that I had the most fun listening to, that I'm most jealous of, as a Gimlet employee, is Limetown. Mm-hmm. I don't know if either of you have listened to Limetown.
Oh, yeah.
It's a mid-roll show, in fact, I believe.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just think Skip and Zach did such a phenomenal job, and that it was a really ambitious, cool, kind of like first big swing at the fiction category.
Right. And a huge success.
Right.
And beautifully made.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like the Wolf, then.
Same craft. Yes.
Well, once again, that other Chris you're hearing is Chris Giliberti, right? Nailed it, yes?
Nailed it.
We did some. Okay, good. The head of multi-platform at Gimlet Media. Do we want to start with learning what that is?
Like it's a title that should be head of multi-platform blank. There's like a thing missing at the end of it. You tell me what it really means.
Yeah. So what it means essentially is I'm the steward of Gimlet's audio library, and I think with a view to how a particular story, set of stories, franchise could live in another format. So when I listen to a Gimlet episode, I sort of think, does this feel like it wants to be a film, or, you know, could it be the germ of a television series? Or, you know, is there something novelistic about it? And from there, try to put something together and give the story a new life in another format.
Do you review every show that Gimlet produces every week?
I don't do it every week, but I do listen to everything.
Every episode that comes out?
Yep.
That's a lot.
And so in your head, as you're listening, do you have a sort of a checklist of things that you keep either mentally or physically that allow you to say, oh yeah, this box. Like, what are those things that you listen for?
Yeah, I mean, I do have sort of a mental checklist, and then I have a physical spreadsheet where I log things just to keep them organized, because it's obviously, Gimlet publishes a lot these
days. I was going to say, how many episodes a year total for the network?
Exactly.
Right.
I would let them round to nearest 10.
Okay.
I think it's got to be, I mean, it's certainly in the hundreds. I don't think it's in the thousands.
Just Reply All is going to be 50-something.
50-something,
right?
Exactly. That was exactly my first step of it. Yeah. I think it's probably, in the low hundreds.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a lot of listening. Now.
Wait, he didn't answer my question about what's on the list.
Ah, yeah.
Nice try.
Well,
but we're journalists.
We are.
Got it.
Well dodged.
So, it's a bit of kind of, I'm sure I do kind of go through a mental checklisting process, but it's a bit intuition driven. It's kind of like a know it when you hear it type thing. So if something feels like for instance, feature is probably the easiest one to lay out. When I hear something and think that it wants to be a feature film, it's a question of, you know, does it kind of conform to a filmic three-act structure? So I feel like most narrative feature audio pieces try to conform to a three-act structure, but there's kind of a different three-act structure in film where you have to have one major plot twist and then another major plot twist, and things have to end somewhat optimistically and lean into thematics that are commercial at the moment, live in a space where there's not another big project that's already been set up. So it's actually like, you know, that's sort of what I think about for feature. And then for TV, it's sort of like, could this thing keep giving? Like, is this the starting place for something that could, continue to unravel in a way that's interesting? Again, like the commercial question of like, who could I imagine buying this? And is there a white space at any kind of major buyer that we would want to set up at? And not just one major buyer, but multiple, because, you know, you can't obviously just go into the process of putting something together just for Netflix.
Just to pitch Netflix, right.
Yeah, exactly. So those are kind of the things that I interrogate mentally when I hear something.
Now, like any good narrative podcast, we do have to take a step back and look at the backstory too. Mm-hmm. you started, before you were at Gimlet, you were at Boston Consulting Group. And as I look at it right now, you know, if you want to be on SNL, you got to go to Second City or The Groundlings or UCB. And apparently, if you want to be a big muckety-muck in podcasting, you have to work at BCG first, because mm-hmm. I believe Matt Lieber, I know our CEO, Eric Dean,
yep.
all BCG alums. How did you go from BCG to podcasting?
Yeah, it's a good question. And yeah, we've totally got a lock on.
It was a pretty good analogy, right? You were there for that?
I was, yeah.
It was a great analogy. So true. I think it was definitely serendipitous and a bit random. I was working in consulting. I covered, like Eric and Matt and also Jim Grau, by the way, who's right. another podcast executive from BCG. I was working in the media and entertainment practice at BCG. So what that meant was I was advising large cap media and entertainment companies on their futures, on strategic growth. In that context, it's a lot of questions around how do we adapt to a digital distribution landscape? And you know, predominantly for print and video companies. So I had never advised a radio client before, but you know, I was thinking about making the switch to a more operational role, because the thing with consulting is it's super wonderful experience and it's really exciting. But for certain types of people, you might feel that you're not getting enough skin in the game, because you kind of hand off this wonderful piece of analysis and you get really invested in this question, and then you find yourself receding from it when you kind of hand off the material to the client. Gotcha. And so I was looking to make that transition that many consultants look to make, and kind of created a short list of companies that I thought were doing really interesting things in media. And Gimlet, was like very, very interesting to me, not the least of which because Matt worked at BCG and I was aware of Matt and had heard wonderful things about him. And so sort of shot him a note and began conversations.
So you come from BCG, but you have to have this very sophisticated story sense, I think, in listening to these episodes that Gimlet turns out every week and trying to decide which one is going to be a three-act film. Where does that part of your brain come from? Where did you learn to think that way?
Yeah, you know, I would say that producing within the realm of film and TV is actually pretty different than producing in audio. I'm blown away at, you know, how much of a Swiss Army knife you have to be a radio producer. Like, I look at the guys on Reply All, and it's like every single one of them can write, can direct vocals, can report,
yeah,
can score. Like,
they can record themselves.
They can record themselves. Like, they're technical producers, they're creative producers, and it's like actually insane. And it like that. That's just not the
welcome
case.
Welcome to the culture of scarcity, as expressed in public media for a long time.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's like, it's no wonder that, you know, when we say, you know, there isn't enough of this talent out there, it's like, well, yeah, like who can do all that? You know, so, you know, in TV and film, producing is much more of a, like, you do have to have story intuition, but it's like high level. It's not like you need to be able to go into a script and really, like, you need to sort of like stoplight level, like great, good, poor, you know, bad, which anybody with any sort of consumer of media with taste could kind of be able to do, and hone over time, of course. And, you know, you need to read something with a view to whether or not it's going to be commercial. You know, when you're diving into a script, is the writer making really expensive choices? Like, are we all of a sudden like in Antarctica on a private jet? And you know what I mean? So it's actually pretty practical stuff on the story side. And then you pretty quickly hand off to a really wonderful writer, if it's a television show, a showrunner, or a filmmaker, director, if it's a feature. And they really come to animate it creatively. And you make a few creative decisions at the top of the process, but they're also equally sort of commercial decisions. So, like, who is that filmmaker going to be? And, you know, where do you want to set up, you know, what buyer, and what is the financing structure going to look like? Are you going to go to a studio, or are you going to go directly to a network? And so all of this to say, I think producing within the context of TV and film is much more a business role than it is like a hardcore creative role the way radio production is.
So, pardon me for butting in here, Lex. Please. Do Gimlet producers come to you and say, you should really listen to this episode? This week's episode is the movie. There's a movie in this. I know it.
Sometimes. I mean,
how often are they right?
We're still waiting.
You know, sometimes they are, but I think sometimes what will also happen, which is actually really interesting, I think, is that they'll be really excited about that given episode for the show, and it will be a really groundbreaking episode and something that winds up getting a ton of listens, but actually wouldn't be right for translation for some reason or other. Maybe there is a competitive project out there, mm-hmm. or maybe it's the sort of thing that's really exciting as a radio story, but there isn't a readily apparent adaptation potential. And I think that there are a lot of those out there.
Mm-hmm. And do you find that you're educating them? Are they trying to make stories that are more possibly useful in those other realms now? Do you sit and say, here are the things you guys should be thinking of when you're making a show, when you're making an episode that might help me?
You know, I should probably do more of that. I mean, although I think the really beautiful thing about how we face the market is we have this really great sensibility as a company, and it actually doesn't pander to what the TV and film markets want. And so we're always sort of 45 degrees to the right of, you know, what they're expecting. And that's actually, I think, a big go-to-market advantage for us. So I'd be hesitant to do too much of that. But people have asked, and there are little ways that we could help in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you weren't hired to do the job that you're doing, right? You were hired as chief of staff.
Yes.
I believe quite possibly the first chief of staff in podcasting.
The first, but not the last.
Right. So what, mm-hmm. I guess...
Did it come with a ceremonial wardrobe? It should.
It should have. It really, if I were more sophisticated in my negotiations. Yes.
But so really I'm asking, what was that role? Why don't they need that role anymore? Or is it filled by somebody else? And how is it that you have defined two new roles for yourself in podcasting?
That's a great question. I came on board when Gimlet was like really tiny in the summer of 2015 in July. And you know, where Gimlet was in its kind of life cycle at that point, on the business side, there was really just Matt Lieber. So
right.
at that stage, there was the startup production team, the Reply All production team, the mystery show production team, John Delore, who I still miss.
The Reverend John Delore.
The Reverend John Delore. So we had a staff reverend. And
why not a chief of staff?
Right, exactly. There are weirder titles. So... Yeah, and basically, when Matt and I were talking about my role and what I would come on board to do, it didn't feel that it was aligned to any function in particular. So initially, I think we were talking about an operations manager role, and it's like, well, I would be doing operations, but in fact, I would also be doing some sales and some marketing and finance and all manner of things, really. So basically, it was a reflection of the fact that I would be out there doing everything, and you know, what do you call somebody that does that?
Chris, I think, is the answer.
Okay, yeah, that's true. I could have gone titleless.
Well, and so why the evolution then? When did the platform thing? Was there some turning point in the development of the company that suddenly this became your full time job?
Yeah. What was interesting about my role was as Gimlet grew, largely, my job became handing things off to other people, which is interesting because in a lot of jobs...
That's my dream job.
it sounds better than it is. But, you know, you sort of go from doing everything, and then Gimlet went through this period of rapid growth, is still going through this period of rapid growth where we needed to hire real experts in all of the areas that I was operating. So we first hired a head of HR. And so then I wasn't doing payroll anymore or writing
nice.
Offer letters. That was a really great, yeah. that was a huge upgrade for me. and then we hired head of finance, Jim Grau. And so he actually brought real sophistication.
From the BCG School of Podcasting.
From the BCG School of Podcasting. we picked him right off. And so he came to own all of the financial reporting and all that. And then we hired a head of sales. And so it kept going. And the one area that was sort of remaining that I was spending a lot of time on was partnerships and business development and just growth and that sort of thing. And we realized somewhere along the way that there was a lot of demand for our IP. And I was kind of the only person that was there to service that demand. And so it started as something I was kind of doing as part of our partnerships push. And then once we started kind of further mining that activity and realizing that there was a lot of business to be had there, we put more of my time against it.
And we have to go to a break in a second, but I have one more question for you before we do. What was the first thing that became the multi-platform event for Gimlet?
Yeah, it was a show called Alex Inc. That's debuting mid-season on ABC this winter. So it's
that's
based
the
on
Zach Braff show, right?
Based Correct. On Startup.
Based on season one of Startup.
And can you tell us a little bit about that origin story? Who came to whom? Did an agent come to you? Did Zach Braff drop by the Gimlet offices in Brooklyn? what happened?
That'd be pretty great. So what happened was a creative executive reached out to us from Davis Entertainment. Davis Entertainment is John Davis's company. John Davis is a big mega producer, mostly in the realm of features, produced iRobot, Joy kind of recently. And he was just beginning to build a TV business. And so he has Blacklist and Dr. Cam that he produces. And his executive came to us and said, I listened to Startup Season 1, love it. Feels like it very much wants to be a workplace comedy. You know, would you be interested in sort of going down the road with us and letting us put it together? And the answer on our end was absolutely, yeah. And so they kind of took it from there. We didn't have a ton of creative input, really. It was kind of an exercise in handing it off and just sort of standing back and being supportive.
I think that's the question a lot of people in podcasting have is, not only can this turn into a TV show or movie, but can't I play in that field too, right? And what's the truth that you have to tell many of us? It's not our job.
Well, actually, no. I mean, I think you can have a lot of influence. I mean, I think it depends on, so every subsequent production that Gimlet has set up, actually, we're attached to in a true active producerial role. And I think it comes down to a few things. I think it's one, it's, you know, the acumen that you sort of present when you're in the deal making. So you have to really be clear about, we want to be attached, and here's what we think we can add if we're attached, and just sort of make the case for yourself, and sort of be savvy in doing so. And I think fundamentally, you know, audio producers, as discussed earlier, I mean, they're a really talented cohort, and they're storytellers, and so there's absolutely a role to be played.
Yeah. I'm convinced. I'm leaving.
Don't let the door hit you.
We're going to talk more with Chris. But first, we have to take care of business. It's what we do. It's mid-roll. We got ads. We have to.
Ads?
Yeah. If you record a podcast, then you already have the tools you need to narrate audiobooks, a microphone, some editing equipment, and a knack for storytelling. Well, Findaway Voices is a new platform that helps authors create audiobooks. All you have to do is register to be a narrator at findawayvoices.com/wolfden. Then they'll start matching you with projects that align with your skills. No aimless browsing through listings required. They're looking for narrators from all over the world. All languages and accents are welcome. I do many. And you have full freedom to set your per finished hour rate or to decline any audiobook project that's offered to you without penalty. Most narrators are setting their rates between $200 to $400 per finished hour, and most books are 6 to 10 hours long. With Findaway Voices, you'll have a steady flow of audiobooks to record, you'll expand your portfolio, and your voice will reach listeners around the world. Visit findawayvoices.com/wolfden to sign up as a narrator today. That's findawayvoices.com/wolfden. The holidays are coming up. Why not give yourself the gift of Stitcher Premium? They have an incredible Black Friday deal going on that you will not want to miss. I have to tell you, I heard an ad for this today on an episode of Off Book that I listened to, and they probably did a better job than I'm going to, but I'm going to try. Get 50% off your first payment for a limited time when you go to stitcherpremium.com/Black Friday and use promo code Black Friday. That's $17.50 for an entire year of Stitcher Premium. I'm in charge of Stitcher Premium mid-roll. I hate this promotion because it's way too cheap. $17.50 for an entire year. Spend cozy winter nights binging on comedy originals like Matt Besser's Stolen Idea or Amanda Lund's The Complete Woman. Listen to new episodes each week of premium shows like Big Ronde's Teacher Lounge, which the AV Club says, mines pure gold from education's underbelly. I will read any pull quote that includes the term underbelly. Plus, with Stitcher Premium, get access to exclusive bonus episodes of your favorite podcasts, ad-free archives, and hundreds of stand-up comedy albums. Just go to stitcherpremium.com/Black Friday and use the promo code Black Friday for 50% off your first payment. stitcherpremium.com/Black Friday. We're back with Chris Giliberti from Gimlet, formerly their chief of staff, now the head of multi-platform.
I can only imagine a bigger title is in your future.
Yes.
I'm just going to keep making them up.
I think you should go to chief of multi-platform next.
Like, ooh, I like that.
That's, I'm just thinking. Now,
got to renew it.
We were just talking about Alex, Inc., which is going to debut this winter.
Yeah.
Yep. On ABC. And it's based on Startup, the first season of Startup, the story of the origins of Gimlet. The second show that came out of Gimlet was Reply All. And the question I have been wanting to ask you as soon as I found out you were the guest is, are you jealous that every week PJ and Alex have some new descriptor or nickname for Matt Lieber and you don't yet merit analogies from them on a weekly basis on that show?
Yes, I have strong feelings about it for many reasons. One, first of all, I'm jealous. Second of all, I've proposed really good ones that have not been implemented. So,
do only Alex and PJ write them right now?
I don't know who writes them. I've pitched them, I think, to Alex Goldman. Can I tell you one that I think is
please.
Really good?
Matt Lieber is?
Matt Lieber is the lunch lady who gives you extra french fries.
Well, that's pretty good.
Whoa.
Isn't that good?
Yes. Yeah.
Conjures up a very warm image for me.
Yes.
Yeah. Of a specific lunch lady.
Mm. Do you remember her name?
Gladys.
Ooh, that's a good lunch lady name.
It is a classic.
Classic,
lunch lady,
yeah.
So you're jealous. You're mad because you're submitting suggestions and they're not taking them.
Like good suggestions, yeah.
Well, any suggestions that they don't take, send our way and I will refer to Chris Bannon as that from now on.
Okay, perfect. But,
and you'll get credit, I believe, at the end of the show.
Oh, good.
We can work that.
We're going to hope that you can option it somewhere, but that's
I want to ask you about the next property that I understand that came into development out of the shows. This is the Reply All story, Man of the People, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's now being turned into a film by Richard Linklater, is that right?
Correct, yeah.
There was a documentary about this same subject, right?
Yes.
So how do you divine whose story is getting told and how do you make sure that this is the Reply All version of this story? Like what was the process there for managing to get this thing even turned into a film deal?
It's a good question. I mean, there's no real hard and fast rules around this stuff. Honestly, it's kind of a bit of, you know, in the case of John Brinkley, he's a deceased public figure. So really anyone could have done this at any time. Reply All has no... you know, particular claim to it. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that there hasn't been a scripted film that's been produced yet. And the Reply All episode presented a very specific take on John Brinkley and his life and sort of laid it out in such a way that you could see the cinematic potential of it.
Can you recount that just because people listening may not have had a chance to hear the episode and they'll search it out, I hope, after this?
Absolutely. So it's been a second since I've listened to it myself, but at kind of the logline level, it centers on a character, John Brinkley, who was this sort of 1920s huckster and was kind of the first big American snake oil salesman. He used technology, in this case, radio, actually, to... you know, promote his products to a big population. And so he would erect these kind of radio towers in his backyard and broadcast out his bogus science about goat testicles, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. I really feel like telling any visual version of a story involving goat testicles does require some cojones. Okay.
Oh my God. How long did you wait before you decided you had to deliver that
as soon as we booked the episode.
Yeah, that's great. All right, and the next one I want to ask you about is also based on a series that I really loved, Crimetown. That's also in development right now. Is that right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. We didn't have really anything to do with that one. Those guys kind of put that together by and large themselves. We made a couple introductions, but that was really it.
Got it. That's a Crimetown specific deal.
Correct.
And with Homecoming had a nice cast on the podcast, right?
It did.
Pretty big.
And David Schwimmer, Catherine Keener. I'm just nailing it. It's not even in here. The producers know. Harry knows. Chris and I have this stuff like on tap mentally, so it's fine.
Wow.
I have to read a script to remember your name.
Yeah, I know. At Amazon, that's where Homecoming is going to launch soon, right? Or in the not too distant future with an up-and-coming actress named Julia Roberts, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's – you've now – like you've hit three major areas, right? You've got broadcast television. You've got premium streaming with Amazon, and you've got a film. What are the media left for you to conquer at this point?
Great question. VR is an area that we'd really like to do something in.
Hmm.
We've also taken a swing at literature with Homecoming. So this past season of Homecoming, we had an iBook exclusive, and we want to do more there. So VR and literature, and maybe stage someday. Although that might be the one format that's less lucrative than podcasting. So I don't know.
Right, more time consuming and much riskier.
Yeah.
In many ways. Is there something you know you want to stay out of? Is there a platform you are just drawing a box around and saying like, nah, not for us?
I can't think of what it would be. You know, all jokes aside about stage, I mean, if the right opportunity came up, that could be something that's neat too. And it probably, the way that would go down is we'd have something set up through a studio that has a theatrical production arm, and we would look to do something there. So we wouldn't be taking the risk. But no, I think we're really, you know, Gimlet is a company that really is somewhat mission-driven. You know, not in a super social justice-y sense, but we do believe that audio has a real empathetic power, and that the stories that we produce have the ability to draw you into someone else's point of view and see the world in a different light and understand people at a greater depth. So we believe in the work we produce very much, and so it's really a joy to see it reach new audiences on new platforms.
It strikes me that you're a sort of doorway. I mean, you go both ways. You're looking out at the world outside of podcasting and trying to see what's there. And you're also looking in to the world of Gimlet to see what sort of creativity can emerge. What do you bring back from the outside world to Gimlet? What do you hear from agents and from people in the film and television industries that you think they need to know? And you can just tell me recently, maybe, things you've heard. This is also us doing corporate espionage by having you on the show.
Love it.
But
it's between us.
I'm truly curious because, you know, I have meetings with agents and people in that business too, and there are some great ideas that emerge from those sources and some not great ideas. What are the things you like that you're hearing in very broad ways that you think, oh, my people should go look at this?
Well, you know, that's actually a really interesting question, and it's something that I do think about quite a bit, because every format has its own sort of norms and
blind spots.
You know, but thinking positively about it, I think there's a lot of process that exists in TV and film just by virtue of the long history of those formats, and so there are certain ways that you engage talent, there are processes around development, and just really a lot of process across every stage, and some of it is red tapey, and is, you know, reactive to things that have gone wrong maybe once, but
right.
You know, you don't need to control for every time. But some of the process, I think, is actually really valuable.
So you're basically saying we're pretty disorganized. I always feel as if podcasting is like television in 1949. Like we're just figuring out.
The ad delivery certainly is.
Well, it's exactly It's exactly that. There was no process. It was sort of, hey, do you want to write a show?
Right.
My first boss in public TV wrote and hosted three television shows a day on his local PBS station. That's for three different age groups of children, and that was just the way they did it.
Wow.
But I think maybe you're trying to make it a more rational business, it sounds like.
In some ways, I think that could make sense. And, you know, for instance, something that happens a lot in TV and film is audience testing. You know, the idea being that you've got a lot of skin in the game, you're spending a ton of money on a production, and you just want external gut checks against your work before you really go out with it in a big way. I don't think that's something we do a ton of in the podcasting format, and podcasts are certainly, you know, an order of magnitude cheaper than TV and film, but it still costs well into the six figures to make a really great podcast, and so it's, you know, not cheap by any stretch. And so if you could, you know, find ways to test things cost effectively, I think that could be a great innovation that the podcasting format could draw from other more mature formats.
How have your producers reacted to that idea?
I think, you know, with open arms, really. I mean, it depends on the team and the show. I mean, I don't think that Some shows, there's not a need for that. I mean, I wouldn't advocate for testing every episode of Reply All. I mean, that's an up-and-running franchise.
Right.
They have a lot of audience feedback over however, you know, 100 plus episodes that they've produced. But for a fiction show, I think we kind of all understand the need for it, and producers and writers are totally on board with that. You know, not least of which because a lot of them come from formats where that's the norm.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. You know, a question I have for you, and it could just be that you're better at it, is, you know, Gimlet has 4+ projects right now being adapted. I'm sure there's more conversations happening. For years of public radio making longer form content from time to time and narrative storytelling, it doesn't feel like that, and I haven't done the math here, but like that in all the archives of public radio episodes that there is as much of a hit rate as you have right now with just Gimlet and its small collection of shows. Is it the time? Is it Gimlet's making more media transmutable stuff? Like, why is it that you're having so much success, do you think?
It's a really interesting question. I mean, I think, you know, part of it is probably related to staffing. I don't think NPR, you know, put anyone against this, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I share that belief, by the way. I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, a ton, and I hear stories all the time where I think, oh, you know, if that were a Gimlet story, I'd be putting it together this way or that way. The gears start turning.
Yeah.
You know, no, I completely agree. And I don't think that it's that Gimlet is the only outfit producing work that's adaptable. I just think that it's, you know, we have me here thinking about it all day, every day. And so, you know, I drum up activity.
It actually did occur in the 70s and 80s at NPR when there was an emphasis on broad cultural impact of radio programming, but when news took over, really that priority starting in the 90s, they gave up on it, and it became too expensive to do.
I only really started paying attention in the 90s.
I know. Yeah. That's why I raised by TV. We can circle yes. back to the whole thing. Is there one thing you wish you have some sort of like side interest in? You hope Gimlet will go into that it hasn't yet had a chance to do.
It's a good
amusement
question.
Parks.
Amusement parks. yeah,
Gimlet
not
world.
That.
Gimlet world.
Gimlet world. Totally. I could see like a PJ mannequin
yes.
just walking around. That'd be cool.
Oh, that would be great.
That'd be
Actually,
great.
You should get one of those anyway.
yeah.
Even a telepresence robot would be, I think, a fine facsimile.
Yeah.
I think I'm really excited about VR for a bunch of reasons. I mean, I think it's an exciting format. I think it shares a lot with this format, podcasting, for a number of reasons. One being the centricity of sound and audio. So really the creative cornerstone of a killer VR piece is excellent sound design. It's what really creates immersion. Secondly, I think it's also a medium in which you're looking to create empathetic experiences if you're using it to its strength.
Who's done that?
Well, there is a great piece at Tribeca 2 years ago, I want to say, I'm going to botch the name. I think it was 10 by 10. And it was a piece about life in solitary confinement.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you enter the piece, you're in the cell and you can sort of really feel. And it was a room scale piece, meaning you put on one of the super fancy headsets and it's geo-fenced. And so you could actually walk around and have depth perception wow. and experience the cell. And that piece, I think, was really using VR to its strength in that you were experiencing this very unique experience of being in a solitary confinement cell.
I can't top that.
I was thinking the studio is not that dissimilar.
No, I think we're allowed more decoration here.
Well, I have to thank you. This is the first time I feel like we've had a really insightful and knowledgeable about the podcasting space, Chris, on the show. So thank you so much.
Happy Thanksgiving to you too, Lex.
Well, but Chris, in all seriousness, thank you so much for being here. Where can our listeners find you? Obviously, they know where to find Gimlet Media shows, but where do they follow Chris online?
Where do they follow me? Oh, God. No one's going to. My last name is a
We have
disaster.
Tens of listeners, okay. Will you ever spell it out for them?
In the show notes, we'll put
there you go. In the show notes, C. Gilliberti 87. That is my Twitter. I'm good at tweeting.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
oh.
It's a good platform for me.
That's great.
So yeah. I'm looking forward to the Twitter adaptation of another Gimlet show. But thank you for your time. Thanks also to my favorite co-host in the world, Chris Bannon.
Thank you, Lex Friedman.
Harry Nelson and Jared O'Connell in the booth. Don't forget you can subscribe to The Wolf Den at earwolf.com or in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever you use, and rate us in whatever place you'd like. You can just go to a friend and say, I really like this show. You can rate us in an app, whatever you want to do.
That whole friend thing is not efficient.
No, it's the slow way.
For us
it's
especially,
more artisanal.
It's really not efficient.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It's a trip to be on. I listen to the show often, so I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Who's your favorite host?
Oh, God. Damn it.
I told you, Adam.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, fine. Yeah. I quit.
Earwolf is now on the Amazon Echo. They just released a new skill for the Echo smart speaker called Daily Earwolf. Now you can ask Alexa to play the funniest moments from your favorite Earwolf shows. Just download the Daily Earwolf skill from Amazon's Skill Store. And if you're a fan of Hello from the Magic Tavern,
and who isn't,
you can also download Magic Tavern Adventure.
That sounds wonderful.
It's a special interactive episode we did of Hello from the Magic Tavern where you can affect the choices we make in the podcast.
I don't think anyone can affect my choices.
I want to interactive.
No, Chunt, you interact. It just means that.
Yeah, I want to interactive. Where's the door?
So if you're listening to this right now and you want to say, Chunt, I wish you were not having this misunderstanding, you could yell that at your Amazon Echo and it would happen.
Finally, you, dear listener, can help us choose our own adventure.
Download these awesome new skills and remember, you can play any Earwolf podcast right from your Echo.
New skills, time to level up.
New skills, time to level up. Level up. I'm bad at being an Echo.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Reza Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.